Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, February 3rd, 2008, and this is show number 133. Well, I can truthfully say it's only a slight Macintosh bias this week because we've got a couple of reviews of non-Macintosh products. Michael Gorman sent in a great review of his new Nokia N810 internet tablet, which is not running OS X. And I've got a great interview with Donald Burr, who has the luxury of having an EPC, and he gives us a great review of that product as well. Again, not running OS X, in that case, running Linux. So we've also got a chit-chat across the pond. It's a packed show, so I better dig in. Well, Connor wrote in with an email with a great title. He called it My Own Little Rantlet. I love it. I plan to steal that phrase from him. He wanted to throw in his two cents about the rant I did with Victor last week about the importance of treating Apple and shareware developers fairly because they are so very good to us. Here's his story. I just received something in the mail today that enforced my love for paying for shareware and the Mac software community in general. In case you haven't seen my latest tweet, I received a handwritten postcard from B Documents, the developers of Timeline, a great little app for making beautiful timelines. I originally heard about it from David Sparks of MacSparky.com, by the way. I love this application so much, and it really touched me that they sent me this postcard all the way from Washington State, and I'm in Pennsylvania. I thought that was very nice. It really gave me an aha moment. Not like the one you brought up at the podcaster meetup. Just listen to that audio. It was great. But I really realized why I'm on the Mac and why it's so much better than those guys up in Redmond. They can copy OS X all they want. I am reminded of the Macworld where there were banners that said, Redmond, start your photocopiers. But in the end, it really is the Mac freeware, shareware, donationware developers that make OS X, well, OS X, and make it so much better than that OS that starts with a W. Wow, Connor, I never got a handwritten note from a developer. That's pretty cool. I think I'll get a review copy of B-Doc's Timeline software so we can learn more about this great company. You also make some great points, Connor. Now everyone go out there and pay your shareware fees. You know I'm a sucker for a web gallery application, right? I post using JAlbum, Picasa web albums. I even tried that crazy PHP web gallery thing that Bart loves. Never did figure that thing out. I love Facebook's photo galleries. So quick and easy and fun to look at, too. But the one thing I never had was a way to post photos particular to my podcast that would keep people on podfeed.com and not send them away to an anonymous looking page. Finally, I started searching for something that would integrate in with WordPress. There's about a zillion options out there, but I found an awesome utility. Get this, it's actually called Awesome Pics Gallery. So, you know, it's got to be good. Right there in the title and everything, it says it's awesome. By the way, it's spelled AWSOM. There's no E on it. Well, installation of Awesome Pics Gallery is really easy. All you have to do is download a plugin, upload it to your WordPress installation, and activate the plugin. Then from there, you upload your images to any directory on your site. Finally, you create a post or a page with one line of code pointing to the folder with the images. How's that for easy? The best part is it keeps people on my site instead of sending them away. Unlike most image galleries, you don't just get a thumbnail and an image, but you also, with one more click, gets you to the full-sized image. That can be good or bad. If you want to protect your full-size images, you'd want to resize them before uploading. In my case, I wanted people to be able to get to them. If you have a WordPress blog, definitely check out Awesome Pics Gallery at awesome.org. By the way, that's the way I posted all of my pictures of Macworld Expo that you see on my website. I promised you a review by Michael Gorman of the Nokia N810 internet tablet. Here's that review. Let's give a listen.
Hello, everybody, the NoSilicast audience. This is Michael G. with a review of the Nokia N810 that my girlfriend gave me for Christmas. Believe me, it was a very big surprise, and I'm glad I got it. It's a little Linux-based tablet PC, and it doesn't weigh that much. In fact, I'll give a link to the specification so Allison can put it up on the webpage as opposed to me reading it. It's a nice unit. It doesn't weigh that much, and it fits in my pants pocket. That's how small it is. And it's thin, and it's not bulky. It's a Linux-based tablet PC. It uses the MAEMO, M-A-E-M-O Linux, and it uses OS 2008, which is apparently the newest operating system for it, which also works on the older N800, apparently. It has a little camera, which is okay. I tried it. It's not super good, but I don't have a camera that I really use that much anyway. But you can take pictures with it. No flash or anything. It is not a phone, though. Do not consider this to be a phone. With the name Nokia, you probably think it could be a phone. It's just a tablet PC. It has the Firefox browser. And what I like about it, since I can't, you know, considered legally blind, it can zoom in and out of a web page, and I can see it fairly well. And it works with most web pages. It doesn't work with my Wells Fargo page, but it does work with many pages. It does allow you to use YouTube, which is kind of nice. And it has other programs you can download, repositories and other such things like maps and stuff. Speaking of maps, it also has a GPS receiver built in. It uses the Wayfinder GPS service, which is not free. You have to pay for 3 years service, and I believe it's $129. And since I don't know much about GPS, I don't know if that's standard or not. I did play with a 7-day trial, and I was able to get it to work. It told me how to get from point A to B by looking at the screen in pedestrian and bicycle mode. If you want it to talk, you have to put it in driver mode, and it will just tell you to turn left or turn right. It won't give the names of the streets, and it doesn't say how far it is to the before you turn, as I've heard some GPS. It does have good points. It does let you listen to internet radio, which is the thing I like about it, and it has its own speakers, and the speakers are okay. They're adequate. They're not super. And the internet radio is okay. The only disadvantage is some stations like the CBC stations in Toronto and stuff use ASF, I believe, Microsoft AFX extension. They don't play those. They don't play some of the Microsoft Windows extension. But hopefully, you know, developers will work on that and make another player that will. I'm hoping that anyway. Overall, it's a good unit. It has Skype. I use Skype. It has Gizmo. And it has other things that I probably forgot to mention, but those are the things I played with. I played with it for about 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, and I'm actually enjoying it quite a bit. It does have Wi-Fi, so I take it to Wi-Fi hotspots and, you know, listen to internet radio, look at web pages, and read the RSS reader, which it also has. To find out what other features it has and where you can get it, I will put links to all the information that I have to Allison, and she can put it up in the show notes. Overall, I give it a 7 or 8 out of 10. The bad part is the radio thing that I hope will be worked out. So I hope you enjoyed this review. And if you can afford the price of it, which, by the way, is retail for $479, you can probably find it cheaper at Amazon. And you think it'll be a fun little toy, a fun little unit to take along. And it is lighter and smaller than the laptop and does quite a bit of features. Check it out. The Nokia N810. Which can be bought at Amazon and other places like that. Thanks, Allison, for letting me do the review of the Nokia 810.
Cole, that was really a great review. You gave a really good flavor for how cool this thing is and the problem that it solves for you. You know, I really think that Apple might have missed the mark with the MacBook Air. They made it thinner and made no sacrifices on keyboard or screen size, but most of the people I talk to seem to want something more portable that takes up a smaller footprint, and thickness is not really the issue. They want something they can shove in a small bag. It's not a thin bag, it's a small bag they want. And they're willing to sacrifice something on size of the keyboard and the display if they have to. Well, Michael gave me some links on the Nokia 810, and I included those in the show notes along with a picture of the N810 so you can see for yourself what he's talking about. Way back last August on show number 109, I told you about my trials and tribulations trying to move Steve's G5 into our spare room where I can't really easily run Ethernet, and it turns out the G5 won't take a wireless card. What was I supposed to do? Well, my friend Bruce back then recommended the Buffalo Wireless Ethernet Converter. It's an interesting device. It plugs into power, then pulls the wireless signal from your router, from your wireless router, and distributes that signal like a router with 4 Ethernet ports. It's worked just fine to connect both the G5 and our TiVo to the internet. There was only one problem. We could never do any kind of file sharing to the G5, and the TiVo couldn't see the other TiVo in the house to move shows between them. Well, I kept blaming the G5 until the TiVo came into the picture recently, but with the TiVo not connecting either, it made me really start suspecting the Buffalo. I ran an experiment. I checked that I could see my MacBook Pro from other Macs when I was on plain old wireless. But then I took it and I plugged it into the Buffalo hardwired on Ethernet and turned off the wireless on the MacBook Pro And guess what? It disappeared from the sharing section. This seemed to imply that the Buffalo was at fault. I went online to see if there was a firmware update, but it said that I had to have Windows to do the firmware update. Well, anyway, fast forward a little bit, I went to Macworld and I saw the Buffalo booth. So I decided to bother them about it. I introduced myself to Richard, who turned out to be a sales manager from Canada. He took notes in a little notebook and took my card and promised to tell engineering about it. Now, what are the chances he'd actually do it, right? I figured none, so I took his card so I could remind him. When I got back home, I created an OmniGraphical diagram to explain my network to the engineers. It was kind of fun making it, actually. It kept me busy for a day or two. I put a copy of it in the show notes for your enjoyment so you can see what I'm talking about. Well, I emailed the diagram over to Richard, and guess what? He wrote back that he did not forget and that he had already contacted engineering and that he'd be glad to forward on my diagram. Sweet! The guy actually did what he said he was going to do. Gotta love that. Well, even better, a few days later, I got an email from Tim over at Buffalo offering to call me and start working on the problem. Get this, he was working at night, so I could actually be at home when he was there. They have 24-hour tech support. Can you believe that? Gets even better. I sent an email to him saying around 8 p.m. my time would be good. I got home at around 7:45. I shot him another email saying I was ready. He immediately wrote back to me and told me he was on another call but would call me in 20 minutes. Perfect. I relaxed and went back to watching Lost until he was ready for me. The first thing he tells me when he calls is that it's a mistake on the website that you need Windows to do the firmware update. Get this, he's totally Mac literate and very patiently walked me through step by step to upgrade the firmware. Even better, it fixed the problem. The G5 is now completely visible on our network. We can log in, share files. I bet we can do back to my Mac. We haven't tried that yet. And we can even move TV shows between our TiVos now. At the end of the call, he said, "Is there anything else you wanted me to help you with tonight?" I actually laughed and I said, "Well, let's see. You called me when you said you would. After conversing with me several times in email to find a convenient time for me, you were Mac literate, you were patient, and you actually solved my problem. So what else could I ask for? Are you going to come over and shine my shoes?" Anyway, I wanted to tell you that story because if I ever get a chance to buy a product that Buffalo makes and somebody else makes it too, you can be 100% sure that I will pick Buffalo for their product over the competitors. My son Kyle inherited Steve's Honda Accord. Oh yeah, the poor teenager's really suffering. It's a 2000 black V6 EX, hand-cared for by moi in terms of waxing and washing, and hand-cared for by Honda Bob for all that mechanical stuff. Of course, being a teenager, he's got to find something wrong with it, right? He might have a good point, though. The thing that's bothering him is that he can't play his iPod in his car with one of those mutant solutions. He doesn't have a tape player, so he can't even use that poor solution. I don't know about you, but I think those things sound horrible. He can use an FM transmitter, but, you know, we're smack dab in the middle of Los Angeles where there's radio stations filling up every single wavelength with no gaps in between. It technically works, but the sound quality is frequently awful, you know, all staticky and stuff. He did build himself a lovely antenna for it. He made a bow out of aluminum foil, and it actually helps. He says it's his ghetto antenna. It's very, very attractive, trust me. I'm telling you, though, he's my future engineer, huh? What do you think? Well, anyway, he asked me recently whether we could get him a new radio that actually just had an 1/8-inch jack on the front so he could just plug in his iPod and get high-quality sound. Well, we're now in hot pursuit of a solution, and who do you think I called first? Of course I called Honda Bob. You gotta remember, he's not just a mechanic, he's a geek too. So, like, he's got all kinds of cool sound system stuff going on with his iPod and his Honda Element, and he's mutated a bunch of cars to do things like this. So he's probably going to install the radio for us and help us make sure we pick something that, you know, fits nicely and looks good when we're done. Remember, if you live in the LA or Orange County areas and you'd like to have just about anything done to your cars, heck, he's even started claying and waxing, cutting into my turf, give him a call over at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. If you want to learn more about how cars work, check out his informative website at hdabob.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, I've been trying to go out of my way to not repeat the reviews that I do for the Mac Review Cast, but there's one application that I just have to tell you about, even though I did do the review over there too. It's called Tubal, And I know I told you that YouTube is dead to me, but there's just an awful lot of good content still up there, and people do love YouTube. They're all looking for a good way to snake the videos down to their computers and move them over to their iPods. There's all these weird hacks I've shown you over the last few years, like watching the activity window in Safari and looking for the largest file as the video stream and then right-clicking it, you know, that whole thing. Remember what a hack that was? Well, then a bunch of websites cropped up that let you copy the link to the video into them, and then it converts the video for you. Then you can drag it over into iTunes and delete the original. Well, that was pretty swell, but now there's something better, at least for the Mac folks. Again, it's called Tubal. This slick little application lets you search for YouTube videos from its own interface or wander around in featured, popular, recently added, you know, all those fun features you have on YouTube. Once you find the video you want, you just select it with a checkbox, or even more than one, and hit download. Bam! It downloads, converts, and puts the video right into your iTunes in the video section, ready for syncing. It's really beautiful. This is the answer to the problem we've all been trying to find, an easy way to get video onto our iPods out of YouTube. Check it out at tubal.tv, that's T-O-O-B-L-E.tv, or you can just Google Tubal, which is really fun to say. Google Tubal, Google Tubal. Anyway, you'll find it that way. Thanks to Niraj for sending me to Tubal. Hi, kids. It's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How you doing today, Bart?
Hi, kids. Hey, I'm older than that.
I was talking to the audience.
I'm sure they'll appreciate that one. Anyway, I'm fine.
Well, Bart and I are a little cranky today because we actually recorded this entire episode yesterday, but I had some issues. I've been testing out the beta of Wiretap Studio, and it was not nice to me. It managed to sample out bits of the show. So instead of being 17 minutes long, it was 9 minutes long, only not like the front or the back missing, every other word missing. So we're cranky, but we're going to do it again here.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's what beta software is all about, isn't it? It was proper beta.
That's true. I definitely don't want to give Ambrosia Software a black eye. I did volunteer to beta test because I said, I don't know what it is, but I find the weirdest problems.
Well, there you go. Another one for them to suss out.
Exactly. All right, well, let's get into it. What we want to talk today is about Twitter clients. Now, I'm sure you guys have heard of Twitter. A lot of people look at Twitter and go, why on earth would I need to do that? Like, I don't have enough interruptions in my day. But I've kind of dabbled in it a little bit, but now Bart's jumped in with both feet, so he's dragging me in with him. So what's our topic for today here, Bart?
Well, we're just going to talk about Twitter clients, really. Like, I only just got into Twittering a couple of weeks ago. I've sort of been putting off getting into Twittering for ages. But now that I have, it's actually kind of cool and has great potential. But everything about Twittering is just a little bit poorly implemented. I mean, the actual Twitter server itself falls over at least twice in the last 2 weeks, so that's too regular anyway. And the clients all seem a little bit amateurish. And the Twitter website itself, well, I've seen two-year-olds with better taste, so it's all a bit amateurish. And yet, it works. And it's still interesting, and it's still good. So it must be a fantastic idea to still be good despite all that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why it's so compelling. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal that talked about it being situational awareness of your friends. Like, you know who's on vacation and who's eating out at an interesting restaurant and who's reading a good book or whatever. You just kind of have this feeling that you know what your friends are up to, and that's somehow compelling. But I'm with you on the website. I checked it last night, and it was down.
Excellent. It proves my point. No, it is strange. It sort of gives you, like you say, a sort of peripheral vision on your cyber world, I think is how I describe it. You know, when you're IMing people, you get sort of the direct chit-chat, but you don't IM all of your acquaintances all the time, and you don't really care about the little things. But Twitter sort of keeps you appraised of, you know, so-and-so's gone to such and such a place, and so-and-so said such a thing, and so-and-so had dinner there, and all those little bits and pieces that you'd never know about otherwise, and you just sort of stay in touch peripherally. Yeah.
And it's not as demanding. If you've got a chat client open, somebody's asking you to respond. There's an expectation of response. But with Twitter, you just, you know, read it if you want to and don't read it if you don't want to.
Yeah, it's not demanding at all. You know, my IM client is Adium, and the little duck is waving both its arms at me going, hello, look at me, look at me, look at me.
And quacking.
Whereas Twitter sort of sits there. And quacking, yes, quacking is very important. Whereas Twitter just sort of sits there and you deal with it if you're in humor for it. And I mean, some days I don't Twitter anything at all. Some days, particularly if I get frustrated with something, I'll have a quick Twitter about it and then I'll feel better.
Yeah, during the last few days, I've been having a just a teeny little bit of a problem with my iPhone, and Twitter was a nice outlet to be able to say things like, "I'm going to throw my iPhone out of the car on the freeway now," and I think Bart was tired of hearing about it in chat, so I moved over to Twitter and bothered everybody with it.
Yeah, perfect idea. You see, it works.
And actually, Bart pointed out a good thing for me. I was able to pull my my notes up to remember exactly what I did to my iPhone through this progression of almost a day and a half of agony. I was able to go back and find it in the Twitter log, so I was able to reproduce what all the steps I did. So after this, after Bart and I are done talking, I'll tell you the whole story of agony.
Cool. So do we want to look at the different clients we've been playing with? Or
no, let's just keep teasing them. Sure, why not?
Well, actually, before we start, I think we were going to say what we were each looking for in a client. So my criteria were simpler than yours because I just wanted something free to suck, whereas I think you wanted a little more.
Oh, it broke up a little bit there. I think what you said was free and doesn't suck. All that came through was suck.
Oh, no, I definitely don't want a client that does suck. Oh, no, no.
Well, I'd like free. I'd even be willing to go low cost, you know, 10 or 15 bucks. But an absolute requirement for me is proxy access. Otherwise, the only time I can Twitter, read or write Twitters would be, you know, after 7 o'clock at night because I'm behind a big corporate firewall. I'm sure they'd prefer I weren't Twittering, but, you know, what the heck. I'm supposed to be dealing with these new technologies. So anyway, I have to have proxy access, and that's actually been pretty hard to find in these clients.
I should probably elaborate a little bit on doesn't suck. What I'm sort of ideally looking for is a nice Mac-like interface that shows you all your current Twitters, all of them, complete, unabridged, as it were. I mean, they're only 140 characters long, so unabridged isn't very big. Gives you a little window to enter new tweets in, and really, that's it. Nice integration with iOS 10 would be nice.
Not ugly, then?
But that's hard enough to find. Not ugly, yeah. I mean, a Mac-like UI isn't ugly, by definition.
All right, so what client's first up on the list?
I think the first client both of us tried was Twitterific, simply because absolutely everyone talks about it pretty much all the time.
Yeah, I looked at Twitterific, and I was excited because you look at Version Tracker, it says it's freeware. Oh, great. As soon as you go to the website, it says, no, it's $15. That's created some confusion. One of the listeners wrote into me and said, well, you know, don't you want to talk about Twitterific being free? But it's definitely not free. It says quite clearly on their website that it's $15. So I think Version Tracker made a mistake there. But it is $15. That's within my low cost. How about the suck factor?
Well, to be honest with you, the fact that I went to Twitterific and expected it to be free and was then planted with $15 price tag made me grumpy before I even loaded the app. And like, it does work. It doesn't do proxy, so it won't work for you.
Right.
Technically work, and it is technically integrated with iOS 10. But there's nothing special about it. There's absolutely nothing about it to make you go, oh, wow, that's cool. It just is. And $15 for an app that doesn't excite me? No, I'm not going to pay it.
All right, so not free and no proxy access. So I think the next one we looked at was Twitter Post.
Yeah, this is one that you pointed me at because I hadn't actually found it, and that's the one which had bad links on Version Tracker and Mac Update, but you're not put off by that. You still managed to find the link to the damn thing. When I installed it, though, I couldn't get it to do anything at all whatsoever. I installed it, entered my username and password. It went, I'm off the contact Twitter now, and 20 minutes later, it hadn't gotten any further than that. So I closed it down, thinking maybe it's just a bug the first time I started it. Started it up again, exact the same thing. At that point, it got dragged into app delete, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, I pretty much had the same experience. It was odd that Version Tracker and Mac updates links are bad. It's a place called Railhead Design, but I did fish it out of Apple.com downloads. But yeah, as I recall, it didn't work for me. The links are bad. I'm not sure the site even exists, and it doesn't do proxy access. So I think there's a joke about that. I don't know if you guys use it, but what is the line? Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play?
Very good. Yeah, I think that's appropriate in this case. Utter train wreck of an application.
So what's up next?
The next one is one that you actually managed to beat into life, which was TwitterPod. It does proxies, so I think it's the one you're actually using, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That's the only one I've found that does proxies.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't really go with my doesn't suck criteria at all. I mean, 140 characters in a tweet, it truncates them. Hello?
I mean,
that's one of
that?
Its two functions in life. Show me tweets, let me make tweets. That's all it has to do. Show, make. Can't show.
You're starting to sound like John C. Dvorak today.
I should probably confess that I've been watching back episodes of The Cranky Geeks, and perhaps it's rubbing off a little.
Okay, so I'm going to stick with TwitterPod, though, because it does do proxy access. And I don't know, the interface, yeah, it is kind of stupid. You can get the rest of the characters, but it's even worse than that. You click on the person's tweet, and then it opens this huge drawer on the left-hand side that has the graphic of whatever they've chosen for their icon is kind of splattered all over. It's repeated a whole bunch of times, so it's really irritating. And then you still have to use a scroll bar to go back and forth to see all 140 characters.
Yeah, so it's a giant, big, ugly drawer with a scroll bar. I mean, how much worse can you get?
Yeah, I'd have to give it the interface sucks award there. But it does do proxies, and it is free.
It is free. That's not worth anything. But anyway, so then, obviously, it's not the client I settled on, you may have guessed. So the client I've settled on is something called Spaz, which is open source, and it's cross-platform in Linux, or sorry, Mac and Windows at the moment, and Linux coming soon, because it's not actually written for any platform at all. It's written to the Adobe... Oh, hang on, what is that for again? AIR, Adobe's Integrated Runtime, that was it. Which is sort of a Java-like thing where you write the code for it once and then it can run on any of the platforms that have Air, which doesn't Mac at the moment. So that immediately brings the upside of it's cross-platform and brings it down. It's not well integrated with the Mac. It doesn't do growl, it doesn't have menu bar integration, and it doesn't look like a Mac application. In fact, I think the person who designed this GUI had a brown Zune because the interface is brown and black.
Oh, come on. It's not that bad. It doesn't have that disgusting little lime green edge around it, at least.
No, that's true. That's its saving grace. It's not entirely as bright as the Zune. It also has everything going against it. You know, when you make a post on Twitter, it shows up what you made the post with. And, of course, it says post from Spaz. But here in Ireland, Spaz isn't really something that you'd like to be calling everyone. It's sort of a plague name for the mentally disabled. So really, the name goes over very poorly here.
In the U.S., I think it's more of, it definitely does mean you're not shooting on all cylinders there in your brain, but it's, I don't think it's been thought of as a derogatory term around here. I remember when I was a little kid, the big insult was, geez, man, don't have a spaz attack. I always liked that phrase, but I haven't heard it around here as being a derogatory phrase, so maybe those guys don't know that.
Yeah, well, obviously not, because I can't imagine they would have intentionally called their software bad name for a mentally retarded person. Somehow, I don't think that was their aim.
It might not be the worst idea to let Funkatron know about it. Heck, I would use it called Funkatron. That's a cool name.
That is actually a cool name. Yeah, actually, I probably should drop them an email and say, by the way, lads, just to let you know. But it, like I say, on an actual practical level, apart from the fact that it doesn't integrate into and doesn't look like a Mac app, it does actually work. It shows you your team, so all the tweets that you're watching, it shows them completely and with the little icon on the next to them.
You mean all 140 characters?
All the URLs. Yeah, all 140 characters. Imagine that. It also has a nice box at the bottom for entering your new tweets with a little countdown so you can watch the characters you have left clocking down. And it also has something like growl, but obviously it isn't growl, so that when a new tweet comes in, it sort of pulls out a little black box from the top of your menu bar that says the content of the tweet, and it disappears again. So it does work. And, I mean, it almost meets my criteria, but it's very badly named, and it doesn't really integrate with the Mac very well. But it works,
now,
so I'm happy.
I talked over you a little bit. You said something about the URLs being shortened.
Yeah, it uses any URL to shorten any URLs it comes across. So instead of having a full URL, you can see tiny URL / whatever.
Now, I noticed,
nice.
I think TwitterPod does that as well. I thought everybody was being, maybe they were being stingy with their 140 characters, so they were all going over and getting snip URL or tiny URL, but that would be unlikely, I suppose.
Yeah, although it would be sensible, because 140 characters is awfully little for URLs.
Definitely, definitely. Now, I noticed that that growl-like behavior, too, where it would just put a Twitter up. I would just get this little gray, well, brownish, zoom-colored box that would pop up. But I noticed it would pop up with those when it was something I'd already seen.
I haven't noticed that behavior.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird. Well, it looks like the overall market here is still pretty weak. There's an opening there, I think, for somebody to do a really good job of this, don't you think?
Yeah, if anyone actually does a Twitter app for the Mac that actually is, you know, that actually catches population, then I think they're onto a winner. I think Twitter is the most popular one, probably the popular one because it was first, and it definitely used to be free. So I guess they think they have enough of the market to get away with charging $15. I think they're premature to do that. I don't think their product is really up to the standard yet to start charging. And I'm going to be sticking with Spaz for that reason. But if someone comes out a really inspiring app, I'll buy it.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, 10 or 15 bucks maybe. But like you said, it's got to be good. It's got to have proxy access, for crying out loud. Aren't there a lot of people stuck behind firewalls like me?
Yeah, and Twitter's a web service. You know, one of the really fundamentals of web stuff is proxies. It's a fact of life. If it goes over the web, it has to go through a HTTP proxy or else you've written it badly. And there really is no excuse not to use proxies.
I mean,
there's no way I can possibly justify not having proxy support in a Twitter client. It's just plain silly.
Unless this is only for people who have nothing to do. They're not, like, actually at work.
Yeah, but you can end up behind proxies anywhere. It's not just a work thing.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I'm also looking forward to seeing whether they come out with a nice Twitter client for the iPod Touch and the iPhone. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, there are also two openings in the market because using the Twitter website on the iPhone, I think you tried it and it wasn't that good, was it?
Yeah, the problem I had was I would put in a Twitter and I'd hit upload and nothing would happen. So I'd wait, you know, 15, 20 seconds, nothing would happen. I'd push the button again and it would come out twice. So I look like a moron.
Look, you're really eager to say what you want to say.
I was really excited about that. Well, I think we've probably beaten this topic to death. What do you think?
Well, if we didn't beat it to death this time, you know, when you include having done it all yesterday, I think I certainly feel as if I've beaten it to death.
Well, now, Bart gave us a link to his website, to bartbouchats.ie, where he has outlined each of these different Twitter clients, and you can go head on over there and read it. And I guess I'm going to draw this episode to a close then.
Okie dokie. So until next time, happy computing.
In talking to Bart there, you heard me discussing slightly obliquely, talking about an iPhone rant that I needed to tell you about. Well, what happened was on Friday, I noticed that my contacts weren't syncing from my iPhone over to my address book. I'd made changes in the iPhone, but they weren't showing up on my Mac. I found an old friend and I'd updated his address and it didn't show up. Well, that kind of concerned me, so I started messing around, you know, poking at different things and reading forum posts. And somebody suggested that if I added a new category in the address book to kind of wake up the sync, it would actually fix things. Well, that's when things began to go horribly, horribly wrong. Somehow, when I synced, all of the names in the iPhone became empty. I mean, like, the names were still there, but there were no phone numbers in the names. There were no addresses in the names. There were no email addresses in the names. But what was weird was if I went over to email, their email addresses actually were in the iPhone. They just weren't connected over to the names. Same thing happened on, like, the favorites list. All the phone numbers were sitting there, but the iPhone didn't know whose phone numbers they were, so they didn't know the names. Oh, it was just, it was frightening to start with, but, you know, I'm pretty tech savvy with this kind of stuff. I'm not going to have a problem. I'm going to go over, I'm going to check out some forums, going to check with my homies. We're going to find a solution to this. Okay, like a day later, I was still without a solution, and I was just getting madder and madder and madder. I think Bart was actually afraid to talk to me at one point. Okay, so the kinds of things that I tried. Somebody said, restore the iPhone. That's great. So I did a restore on the iPhone, even though I was kind of worried. This is kind of a dodgy thing, kind of extreme. But one of the things it does is it says, I've got a backup. Do you want me to use the backup? Sure, use the backup. That way I won't lose anything. That didn't work. So then I thought, you know what? My Time Machine backup actually has the iPhone backup on it, right? Because I did it like 10 days ago. So that's not a problem. That should be working just fine. I should be able to go over and find the iPhone backup. That'd be great, right? Yeah, that sounds really good, except Apple didn't update the iPhone backup, did not put it in the backup for Time Machine. I couldn't believe it. I was furious. At this point, I'm hammering away to Bart and complaining about this whole thing. But I was thinking, you know, why isn't it backing it up? And he says, well, why would they back up a backup? That's kind of weird, Allison. Why do you expect them to do that? Well, the problem is when you sync your iPhone, it creates that backup right at that moment. So it's always overwriting the backup that you actually need. So I really think it should have backed it up. Now, you might be wondering why it's been 10 days since I've done a Time Machine backup. That's because it won't back up my disk anymore. Have I mentioned that I hate Time Machine? Yeah, I'm getting really, really tired of it. It does not work for me. I've been trying to do the backup. It won't do it because it says I don't have enough disk space, but I have more disk space on the hard drive and the external drive than I do on my internal drive of what I'm asking it to back up. Tired of Time Machine. I wish those super duper people would get it working. Okay, wait, we were ranting about the iPhone, not Time Machine. I got to get back to that. Okay, so then I thought, you know what? I better run a restore without the backup. Well, that one was really scary because it guaranteed that I was going to lose all my notes because stupid Apple won't let me sync them with notes in OS X. There's notes in OS X. They look just like the little notes in the iPhone, but they don't sync. So I emailed them to myself hoping that, you know, at some point I could get that to, I don't know, do something with it. But fat lot of good it's going to do over my hard drive. But I thought I'd give it a try. Well, guess what? It still didn't fix it. Okay, fine. That's great. Now I've lost all my notes and I don't have a working iPhone. Basically, I can't do anything, but I can surf. I can surf the internet because all my bookmarks are there. That's fine. I can check the weather. I can check the stocks, but I can't make a phone call because I don't know anybody's phone number anymore. Okay, so I exported a copy of the address book on my Mac and I backed that file up on an external drive. Not Time Machine, but an external drive, so I had that set. So I knew that I could get back my address book if I had to. I deleted all of the addresses in my address book. I deleted all of the address plists. I logged out. I logged back in. I reset the sync history in iSync, which, by the way, was this whole thing people were talking about how it saved their lives. Didn't save me. But anyway, I logged back out, logged back in. Then I pulled all the addresses back in. And it still didn't fix the iPhone. Actually, I did a sync before I pulled them all back in. I left the address book empty on the Mac, and it just pulled in empty addresses into the Mac. So it was syncing one way. It was going from the iPhone into the Mac. Okay, I'm really getting irritated now. I'm sitting in the back of the car while Steve's driving us to San Diego, and I'm sitting there contemplating, actually twittering, that I'm just going to toss my iPhone out the window. I believe that was one of my last times I twittered when Bart was just like completely avoiding me because I was afraid I was going to eat someone. Anyway, finally late Friday night, I had an interesting thought. I'd noticed early on that it was iTunes that was not noticing any changes I made in the address book. I started thinking about that. So I'm making changes on the iPhone, I'm making changes on the address book, but iTunes is not noticing the changes in the address book on the Mac. Like when I added that category in order to kind of wake things up, well, iTunes didn't notice that. So I started thinking, well, wait a minute. Maybe the iPhone doesn't have anything to do with it. I've been swearing at the iPhone. Maybe it's actually iTunes and the address book talking to each other was the problem. So I deleted the plists and all that kind of stuff for iTunes, which of course didn't fix anything either. But it was kind of interesting. But then I got the idea to sync my iPod instead of my iPhone and see what would happen to the contacts in there. Guess what? It erased all of the contact info on my iPod and left the contact names in place. So, it has nothing to do with the iPhone. The iPhone has had its character defamed, but iTunes is and address book are really on my nerves at this point. Well, late Friday, I found someone posted the fix, and it's very odd, but it worked. Thank goodness. It's kind of odd in the sense that I did far more destructive things to my address book that you would think would have awakened it. But what the person actually put out on discussions.apple.com, and there's a link in the show notes, here's what they said to do. Go to address book, select all the contacts, and delete them. Don't do anything else, just wait a few seconds, like up to a minute, and in iTunes, in the info tab, it says your groups will show up again. Well, they didn't show up for me. But then they said to go back to address book, hit Command-Z for undo, and all your contacts will come back in, and somehow syncing works again. I do not understand why that works, but if I knew that person's name, I would send them flowers, I would send them chocolate, I would send them iTunes gift certificates, whatever it takes, because I was really getting angry towards the end of this. But my problem is solved, and I'm going to stop whining for it to you. I'll probably tell everybody else I know about it, though. Well, you know what? I have babbled on so long here that I don't think I'm going to have time to include my interview with Donald about the EPC that he got. I think I'm just going to tease you and give it to you next week. It's a lengthy discussion because he does such a great job of describing this thing, so I don't want to shortchange it. And I know people kind of like the consistency of the show being right around 40 minutes. So we've got that to look forward to next week. I've been really enjoying all the great emails I get from you guys. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. In fact, I should mention that your reviews have actually helped. Jack from Reno actually found the show because it made such a prominent placement on the How to Tech podcast. So keep up all the great work. Keep sending me emails at allison@podfeed.com. And thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.